737 with Don Wade and Roma, the most positive, optimistic radio experience in the universe. The big story, of course, is the U.S. getting bin Laden. But keep in mind that the budget hits everybody square in the pocketbook. And let's get right to that with Congressman Paul Ryan. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, Don and Roma, how you doing?
Good. We haven't spoken to you since the dueling plans, when the president invited you to sit in front of him, and then he verbally did a bit of a slapping around in a political speech. How did that feel to you, sitting having the president kind of dress your plan down?
You know, being accused of not wanting to help, you know, autistic children and kids with Down syndrome and people's grandparents is kind of base political demagoguery that you typically don't expect from a person like that in a speech like that. But I think the president basically decided to get real political, and that's kind of what I concluded. He didn't put a plan out, by the way. I mean, he put a budget out in February, which didn't do anything. In his speech, you know, we've asked the Congressional Budget Office to give us an analysis of it. They said, well, it's a speech. There's nothing you can analyze. We asked the OMB for the numbers, and they just referred us to a press release. So, you know, it's not a plan. He basically said he wants the new Medicare board he's going to create next year to just cut more Medicare funding, which affects current seniors. And that means this board of 59 elected people will just do more cutting to meet his new targets. But that's really the only detail we got from him.
Yeah.
So we haven't gotten really a plan from the president yet to actually solve our debt crisis and get our debt paid off. We put a plan out there that's real, went through the regular order in Congress, passed the House, and it pays off our national debt. And it saves Medicare and Medicaid for future generations and preserves it exactly as it is for the current generation. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that he's using such hardcore political rhetoric. It makes it harder for things to get done. It makes it harder for parties to come together to fix the problem. But, you know, I'm a big boy. I've heard this kind of rhetoric before, usually not from a president, but nevertheless, my hope is we can still get on with governing and not with politics.
I'm sure you were quite surprised since he had personally invited you.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean, when they invited me and said that they thought, you know, we thought it was an olive branch. You know, negotiated with us on the tax bill. They negotiated on the continuing resolution of the government shutdown. And so when they asked us to come to the speech, we thought it was more sort of, okay, this is his new normal, and it's another olive branch, and he wants to build on these bipartisan agreements, and it was anything but that.
Yeah. But his speech has not resonated with the public because you have had overflow crowds for your town halls.
Oh, yeah.
And it apparently, when they present your program, your Medicare program, the majority of the public supports your plan to change Medicare into a voucher program.
It's actually not even a voucher. First, our plan says if you're 55 or above, nothing changes. And the reason we can keep the promise that government has made to you, which is going bankrupt in 9 years, is we reform it for the 54 and below crowd. And it's not a voucher program. It's a premium support system, which works like the plan. It works like the system that federal employees and members of Congress have. It would look like the Medicare Advantage program does for current seniors, or it would work like the prescription drug benefit, where Medicare would subsidize a plan that you pick from a list of Medicare pre-approved guaranteed coverage plans, and you would get more subsidy if you're middle or lower income. You would get less of a subsidy if you're a wealthy person, and as you get sicker, you get even more subsidy to protect your premiums from going up as your health condition deteriorates. Doing it this way, according to Medicare, makes the system solvent, not only for, you know, the current generation, so we can keep promise of the current benefits for them, but it makes it solvent for, you know, our generation. So when we retire, we can actually count on the program. That's the problem. People just don't realize this. Medicare is going bankrupt, and doing nothing is not an option. The president would rather have a board of 15 people he appoints who just indiscriminately decide how to cut Medicare. They don't go to Congress for approval. They just do it. We don't think we should have a price control board or rationing board. We believe we should keep it as it is for current seniors, and then the next generation, give them more choices, a more personalized Medicare program that lets them shop and pick the plan that's best for them. And we give people who have less more help and people who have more less help. And doing it that way makes it solvent.
There's a New York Times survey. By the way, we're talking with Congressman Paul Ryan, if you're a little clock radio.
Mr. Budget.
The New York Times survey found twice as many prefer cutting government programs that benefit them, that's 58%, to having their taxes raised, 29%. So it appears that people are willing to have certain programs cut right. back if we can't afford it.
And we propose a number of spending cuts, but on the basic benefits, you know, Medicare and Social Security, we're basically saying there's no need to cut current seniors right now. If we fix these programs for the future, for the younger generation, if we cut spending in other areas of government to get our deficit under control, to get our debt going down, then we can avoid the bitter kind of European-like austerity where you're cutting indiscriminately across the board and hurting current seniors. The whole point we're trying to make is we want to preempt a debt crisis. We want to prevent a debt-type crisis where you're getting everybody. Because people who have already retired, well, they've already retired. And they've organized their lives around these programs. And our argument is if we get government to begin to live within its means, then we can keep those commitments. But we have to reform these programs for the next generation to prevent the debt from getting out of control, to prevent that debt crisis that is coming, and to get our economy growing and prospering. Borrowing this much money and continuing it just means our economy is going to crash, and we can't keep doing that. And so for economic growth, for keeping commitments to current seniors, and for having programs, Medicare and Medicaid, that we can count on for the next generation, you've got to reform these programs.
Are you encouraged by these town hall reacting, the reaction that you're getting at the town hall?
I'm very encouraged. Look, you know, we do a sort of a show of hands and kind of a read of the room. I did 19 town halls in southern Wisconsin last week. And we think the crowds, you know, were on average about 80% in favor of this and 20% opposed. And yeah, and sure, there were some groups that were activated to come out and oppose it, but they were in a distinct minority. I really believe that people, at least if Wisconsinites are an indicator of the rest of the country, they're ready to be talked to like adults. They know we have a massive fiscal problem. They know that we've got to take on this challenge, and they want to hear the truth. They want to be, you know, spoken to with facts, and they want to hear the truth and what it's going to take to get this country back on track. And I think people are ready for it. And I don't think they're going to reward the politician who tries to demagogue, who tries to exploit people's fears and emotions and anxieties. And so my hope is, and I feel that this is going the right way, is politics should stop rewarding the politician who keeps making the empty promise, who preys on fears, and start rewarding the politician who tells them the truth, tells them really where we are and what we need to do to get this country back on track.
You have a video that's online, right?
Yes.
We talked about it a number of times.
But where does somebody go to see a video of you presenting your plan?
Explain.
Just to go to budget.house.gov. You can download the. It's very. I wrote the budget this year, unlike we typically do in congressional, you know, budget geek speak, and I wrote it in a very digestible, easy to read way. It's the path to prosperity. You can go to budget.house.gov, G-O-V, and you can see a video that walks people through what it does.
That's you on screen with the graphs and charts.
Yeah, in the budget committee room.
Yeah.
That is great. And I want to know what
young web kids from Wauwatosa know how to do all this stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. It's beyond my comprehension, but they know how to do it, so.
All right, now, Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, is giving Congress more time to negotiate on a deal that would raise the nation's borrowing limit, the debt limit.
Right.
Is this a good idea, and what kind of use will you make of it?
Well, obviously, it's not a good idea to have to do this, but unfortunately, the reason the debt limit is being hit or reached is because of spending that's already taken place. So the cow is already out of the barn. The spending has already been spent. So we are going to come up against the debt limit. It is good that we have more time now. many of us who sort of know how this works knew that, but I'm glad he's made it public. Our thinking in the House is, look, to accompany a debt limit increase with no fiscal reforms would be a real problem. It would basically show the world and the credit markets that we're not getting our act together, that we're just rubber stamping more debt limit increases and we're not getting the situation under control. So we really believe, for the sake of our economy and just good policy, you got to have real fiscal controls, real spending cuts attached to a debt limit increase. So because we've maxed out this credit card, we got to make sure that we have a new credit card that has controls on it. We don't want to just get new credit cards. We don't want to just rubber stamp a debt limit increase. We understand the consequences of defaulting on our bonds, which would be bad, and that's why we want to make sure we put the right reforms in place to try and get this country on the right track, because if we keep going on the path we are on, and the last 2 years really accelerated our descent into a debt crisis, we've got to turn the situation around, and that's what we're basically insisting on as part of a debt ceiling deal.
Very conservative Senator Sam Coburn says raising tax revenue may be necessary. Do you agree with him?
Tom is a very good friend of mine. I don't agree on raising tax rates. Raising tax revenue, yes, but here's how I would do it. Grow the economy. If you know, the best indicator of how tax revenues increase or decrease is by getting economic growth going. And you don't grow the economy by raising tax rates. You don't grow the economy by taxing American producers, American manufacturers more than our foreign competitors tax theirs. We lose under those instances. So the old thinking in Washington, which is just raise taxes, or raise taxes on this person or that person, doesn't work. A lot of people say, well, just tax the rich. Then all the problems are solved. If we just took away the Bush tax cuts on the high-income earners, which the president proposes, 10 years of those revenues would equal only about half of this year's deficit altogether. I mean, if we took every dollar from everybody making over $250,000, every couple in small business making over $250,000, it'd fund our government for about 7.5 months.
So you got to get the economy up.
So you just can't go down that tax increase route. And if you do, my fear is you'll shut down the economy. You'll hurt job creation. You'll penalize job creators. So we got to get the economy growing, and that's how you grow revenues. So yes, we want more revenues. But the best way to do it is through economic growth, getting people from collecting unemployment to collecting a paycheck and paying taxes. That's the best recipe for success.
Congressman Paul Ryan, there are people who say you owe it to the country that if we have to drag you kicking and screaming, you must be a candidate for president in 2012.
It's a free country. I can do what I want.
Is that a no?
Look, it is not in my cards. I'm not planning that.
Okay.
The field's still going to materialize. Let's see if some other folks get in. I'm interested to see what the guy down south from you all does. You know, Mitch Daniels down there. I think he'd be an intriguing candidate. So we'll see what the field looks like. I think we'll probably have more people getting in.
Thank you so much for joining us.
That wasn't exactly
morning.
A no.
No. I'm not running. But I just think
like
that there are other interesting people that are probably going to get in, and let's watch for them.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. There he is. And you ought to go and look at that video online. It's that is really an interesting presentation. Budget.house.gov.